Hello, everybody, and welcome to the July 8th, 2015 edition of Weekly Manga Recap. I'm Y Ruler of Time, here alongside Rolo T. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, Nick. I'm currently battling a headache at the moment, so if you hear me start crying, or... I wouldn't cry. I'm too manly for that. But if you hear me start praying to Satan for things, understand there's a lot of repressed Catholicism issues at work there, and also I may need some Advil or something like that.
Okay.
I'm starting to play with the idea of joining the Church of Scientology, so I really don't want to take any Advil or medicine that makes you weaker, so that's kind of my attitude with things
right now. You're jumping between a lot of different faiths there, and you're...
Yeah, well, one moment I'm kind of like, this Satan guy seems pretty cool, and then the other time I'm like, you know what I want my religion to be more like? Fucking Discworld.
There are headaches in Discworld, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
I think there's actually a god of hangovers.
That's just, you've crushed my dreams, Nick. You're like Sister Marilyn all over again.
Boy.
She ate peanut butter out of a jar with her fingers.
Really?
Yeah, in class, in front of people. This is very disturbing.
You're not be planning on giving that peanut butter to anybody else, I'll tell you that much.
I just prefer if she, like, kept eating it to herself, as opposed to making it a class activity of, like, watch me eat this! What are you gonna
class, do? You must now prepare a statement, a report on how I eat peanut butter straight from the jar.
Sister Marilyn, are there 3 G's in disgusting? Because if not, I'm going to add a couple.
No questions until the end.
Oh, my. I don't like this class much. Nick, I had a weird moment today. Not today, but recently. I was getting the books ready because we had that contest. That if you were in the Osamu fan club, you got picked, and I'd send the books out to you. We picked the winner, contacted them, and I made it like a point, like, oh, if you want, I can sign the books if you want. You know, I assume most people probably wouldn't want me to, but this person did. And I had a thought that I was like, I can't share this with anyone because it's going to come off like the douchiest thought in the world. But I was like, I have no pens in my house suitable for signing autographs. How is this possible? And I was like, I don't sign autographs. It's not like I'm, you know, like Ben Affleck, where like I walk down the street and somebody's going to hand me something like, can you please sign this? I think I've signed like 7 things over the course of my life, and 3 of them were probably begrudgingly because I was next to Todd in the shadows and the person just didn't feel like being rude enough to be like, no.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, of course. Is there like, who is this? Is this cold guy? I don't know who this is.
I have occasionally like, if I'm just at a con where someone else is, I think that I average 1.5 people recognizing me and asking me for that. And it's like, okay, yeah, sure. But it's like, you know, if I go to one con like that a year, then yeah, it's not worth it to have a pen for that.
Like, I just have my autograph pen and it's just like in a glass case that says like, break when someone cares.
Yeah, you know, keep it in a quick draw holster. You know, so that, you know, it pulls the cap off in one fluid motion. You don't have to worry about it.
Like, I don't have time to waste. Someone needs my autograph.
Aha! It's signed in 0.2 seconds flat. Now for the next one. Oh, wait, there is
the next one. Oh, well.
There's not going to be a next one until next year.
Maybe I'll just practice again.
Make the fancy signature. Ah! And I've practiced so many times, I'm out of ink.
Yeah, well, buy another pen and save that one for when I really need it. I better test it to make sure this isn't out of ink when I need it.
This investment was totally worth it.
If anything, I should probably get more pens. No, I had that thought. I was like, is there any non-douchey way to express this thought? Like, guys, I don't have any pens that work for signatures.
Oh, no. Whatever will I do?
They'll be like, oh no, the Z-minus grade podcast celebrity doesn't have a fucking pen for autographs.
Hey, we are easily 20 letter grades above that.
You know what? I don't know if we are, if we can't beat these woodworkers, Nick.
20 letter grades means we're still an F, Chris.
I'm just saying, I don't know what I'd rank the woodworkers, but we're below them, Nick. It's not looking good for us.
No. Anyway. So that we can maintain that solid F-minus podcast grade, we've got to move on into the regular content of our show. We are going to be doing Biomega next week. Right now, just going to be jumping into the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap with 2 Fairy Tail chapters, because we did it early last week.
I can't tell you, Nick, how excited I am to talk about Fairy Tail this week.
Awesome.
I'm, like, giddy in anticipation for it.
Well, let's do the other Magical Adventure series first. Black Clover, page 20, one instant. Which opens with a cover page of baby Asta and Yuno being tucked into bed by a nun. With two of their friends whose names aren't important because they haven't shown up since, like, the first chapter.
Now, do you think, like, they sleep like that because, like, that's just how they, like, randomly fall asleep? Or is this, like, them saying, like, oh, no, this, like, orphanage, like, just had one bed, so they crammed as many kids into it as possible?
They seem unnecessarily crowded together because those kids are not big enough for that bed. They've got, like, I don't know.
Is this a safety issue? Should we be calling someone, like, child services on this nun?
What child services would there be outside
magical
of
magical child services? I don't know. Like, someone has, like, government magic. Like, he's just, like, fucking... Subpoena! Subpoena magic! Subpoena armor! I'm taking your children away. Caseworker powers, go!
Oh, I'm so glad they'll be put in a proper home then. No, we're just gonna put them on the street.
Yeah, we're just gonna kill them. Maybe make some of them into horse food, but, mostly just kill them.
And, you know, conduct magical experiments on some after we force them to kill each other. What was that last part? Nothing!
Horse meat? They're like, oh, okay. Yeah, you can have a couple.
So, last time, Asta got his new sword and he managed to launch a wave of energy with it. In this chapter, we find out it actually launched slashing water magic somehow. And, fuck. I keep forgetting her name.
It's a fucking drink. Mimosa.
Mimosa! Yes! I remembered the first letter, yay.
Hey, it was a team effort there. I remembered it was a drink. You got an M, and I was like, well, it's coming to me, Nick!
Margarita!
Yeah, I'm like, Michelin!
Hello! So, Mimosa is like, oh, did he borrow Noelle's magic? And what is that sword? So, seemingly, in addition to having the cleaver that negates magic, Asta now has a sword that allows him to mimic magic, I guess. So, this seems like it could be more interesting, I guess, than just, I negate everything and win. So, he continues to launch a wave of water at Mars. It breaks through his defenses and shatters his armor and stuff. And Asta's like, I don't really get it, but I did it. Also, there is a shard of mineral sticking right in my stomach.
Also, fuck me.
So that seems like it should just be the end of the chapter right there, because he falls to the ground and people are like, Asta! But no, Mars is still up and he's still got his giant gem golem thing surrounding him. He hefts up his cleaver and is like, oh, I'll kill you, you naive kid. And pretty much everyone is like, no, we're all stuck and can't do anything. And then Asta is saved anyway because, had that extra spell stuck in his tome, although he didn't really process it before. And so, you know, he just has this big moment of, oh, I can't let you die. And he sees a little pixie pop up next to him. And with pixie, like, just goes like that. And the giant sword that Mara summoned shatters. And then his eyes roll into the back of his head as everything around him shatters and he gets thrown to the wall. And, I guess he's down now. Maybe he's dead.
That'd be pretty dark. They, like, brought him back, gave him a backstory just to murder him.
Uh-huh.
Like, we were gonna arrest him before, but, Nobby over there said, thought differently.
Right. So, yeah, everyone's like, oh, how did you do that, you know? And then they look over, and Mara's like, oh, he's really defeated! And, you know, eventually realize, oh, wait, the writing from that scroll is in my book. Right. And then Asta's new sword falls into his tome, and which has new writing in it as well. And then the cave starts to collapse.
It's basically them saying, like, okay, I know there was a lot of really cool loot in here, but you guys can't actually get this.
You can't actually be rich.
It's like the end of the smuggler storyline in fucking the Old Republic, where, like, you found an ancient legendary treasure. Well, you go through this, like, it's like 20 hours of, like, you find this legendary treasure, and at the end of it, you get the same credits everyone else gets for their things. It's like, this legendary treasure sucks balls. I made, like, essentially what's, like, $200 off of this. This sucks. Like, yeah, we can't actually give you a legendary vault of treasure. We just needed it for narrative purposes.
So hush.
Yeah. You got a modifiable gun or some bullshit like that. Just be happy.
So everyone is kind of in dire straits right now because the dungeon is collapsing around them, and Asta is unconscious and bleeding out. Noelle also apparently isn't doing so well, although she at least is no longer mortally wounded. So, yeah, things not looking so good.
What did you think of the chapter, Nick?
It was interesting. I mean, it's really just kind of a two-note chapter, you know. Mm-hmm. Or really even a one-note thing, which is they've got new powers, and here's a little taste of what they can do. And they're super powerful, so that's about it.
The series is getting a little bit of hate. I have that One Piece forum I do. It's a role-playing forum. Everybody goes around and makes pretend pirates, and we have fun adventures and stuff like that. But there's also a part of the forum that is just for, discussing things. So we actually have a lot of people who have joined the forums just to talk about manga, because, they're fans of WMR. They talk with each other. They have very detailed conversations each week on, World Trigger, Fairy Tail, things like that. And each week, the thoughts regarding Black Clover are just progressively getting more and more negative. And to the point of just like, fuck this week, I hate everything. And I'm just like, all right, guys. I want to, be that voice that comes in and be like, all right, maybe it's time to, try to not go at this as harshly as it is. Because I know, we were pretty shitty on World Trigger, and it's funny in retrospect to be like, oh, those guys hate it, now they can't stop deleting it. Yeah, but I'm like, well, maybe it is better to go into it with a more optimistic view. So I actually, contrary to what a lot of people were thinking at this chapter, I actually like this chapter for the most part. I think Asta's upgrade is actually pretty cool. I don't know if this is a sword copies magic or if it maybe absorbs nearby magic and it allows it to manipulate that way.
Mimosa specifically says, did he borrow Noelle's magic?
Yeah, so it seems like an interesting thing there. But what I love about it is he gets his upgrade, then fucking almost dies. Like, he loses the fight and almost dies. You never see that when a character gets an upgrade. It's always like, I've got a new wind shuriken power, and I'm gonna beat you with it. He's like, I've got my magic copying sword, and oh shit, I've got a chunk of granite in my fucking colon. I'm just gonna die here slowly.
It's not like, the power didn't work either. It worked exactly how it was supposed to, and then he looks down and says, oh, I've been impaled.
Oh dear, what a bad day. I like it that way. The only thing that I'm still having trouble getting into this series on, and I think it's starting to become more and more clear to me where my negatives on this series come from. I didn't really care much about Yuno's, upgrade. It's not like the fairy thing bothers me or anything like that. It's just, God, Yuno needs a personality. That dude has two notes to him. One, I'm really good at magic. Two, I really like Asta. That dude needs a personality. He needs something. He needs, a Kaiba-like attitude, or he needs, a family clan that can be murdered so he gets all, emo, like Sasuke. And I know that's normally not a good thing, but I'm like, I will take anything at this point if it gives him a character trait. Because I think if you give him something, it would help even just Asta in unison. Because it would, give them something to be friendly and fun about beyond, let's both be Wizard King.
That's not how it works.
Yeah, they can only be one. What? Oh, well, I'll just kill you
now.
There
can be only one, I said that.
But for the most part, I actually enjoyed this chapter. I'm not saying, this is the turnaround, Nick. This is the point where I start, I'm crazy about it each week. But I did, for the most part, I think, like this chapter. And part of it is also Fairy Tail was so hilariously awful this week. Everything has been lifted up in comparison. So I that little credit has to go that way as well.
It's like, the way that water works. If you press something far down, the level of water rises around it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I am basically on the same page as you. I think this definitely can make combat in the series more interesting. Asta no longer just has his default kill everything sword. He has something that can be powerful, but that can at least be used in interesting ways. It really just comes down to, though, how the characters are going to evolve from this. The thing that really turned us around to Black Trigger was getting to know Yuma better. Mm-hmm. And getting to understand him beyond what he first appeared to be. It's been about the same length of time that Black Clover's been running as it took us to get to the point where World Trigger started to turn around, when Yuma had the flashback that revealed important parts of his character, ensure that he was more than just, I make this face like this, and I'm totally better than everyone, and you can't lie to me, I'm so awesome.
You guys suck.
So, we need more to Asta than, oh, that's so awesome, shiny eyes. I'm going to be the Wizard King, because why?
It's the only thing to do in this kingdom defined by... It's like if you tried to get...
This kingdom's boring.
It's like if you tried to give Toriko a backstory, like, why did you want to become a gourmet hunter? He's like, have you seen this world? Everything revolves around food. What was I going to be?
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I could bench press a truck, and our entire economy is run by how many fucking food items you can procure.
Everyone either gets food or cooks food, and that's basically it.
And if you don't, your job is fucking superfluous to things, ultimately. He's like, I manage accounts for different systems. Ha! There's a pasta that can do that.
Hey, it's gotta be difficult to actually run the books for food. Just a world of food.
Yeah. It'd actually probably be, I imagine, rather difficult. Also, probably very delicious.
Let's move on to Bleach. 633, Friend 3. So, last time, Jugo Bak saw Jugo and Bazby, and Bazby was like, crushed under spirit pressure, and Jugo's like, I'm fine. And Jugo Bak was like, you are part of me, and this is totally not creepy. And,
do you mind if I lick your face a little bit? Yes, actually, a lot.
Yeah, I do very much so.
Did I need to actually tell you that? I thought that kind of went without saying.
Oh, what? Nobody seems to mind. Otherwise, that's because they're terrified of the view.
That's because you have 17 eyeballs.
Would you rather I stare at you with them? No, you can just look my face and get over with it. You're like,
yeah, if that's what ends this, then yes, just do it once and hurry up. Did he actually have the fucking... I thought the multiple eyeballs was something, like, recent he developed, though.
It is.
Okay, so this flashback's just not accurate to how things should be?
When did he get the eyeballs?
Because I thought that was part of, like, I've awakened, and now I can see, you know, I was 9 years of suffering.
Right, that was when he was fighting with Hyosabe, and he said, my eyes are actually open now. So he might have them at this point, but just isn't demonstrating them. It's possible. I mean, this is talking about the eyes with multiple pupils and stuff.
Yeah, because he has the eyes. Yeah, the eyes with multiple pupils in this.
Does he?
Yeah. If you look at certain panels, you can see he actually has multiple eyes. Yeah.
The stuff where he's got eyes all over his face and stuff, that's from absorbing the arm of the Soul King.
At least I think so. Let me go through this. Maybe I might be talking crazy here, but I thought there's at least one or two. Yeah, you can see, page 114 when we get to it, you can see he has the multiple pupils.
So, it turns out that Bazby's whole plot to assassinate Jugo Bak takes the backseat to, I'm supposed to be stronger and better than Jugo is! That's basically the entire thing. Like, it's like, why were you chosen Jugo? You want to kill the guy, what do you fucking care? Just kill him!
It's so weird. Like, first and foremost, this is the plan that from the very beginning, you're like, this is an awful plan. I know you're fucking children or teenagers, but from the very moment you hear the plan of we're going to join up with Jugo Bak and kill him once we become his lieutenants, you're like, this is just going to end in you guys dying. There's no way this works out in your favor. But even then, like, the flashback looked like it was going to serve the purpose of, like, giving these two a fond relationship, but by the end, you're just like, Bazby's a little fucking cunt, isn't he?
He really sucks, yeah. So, I mean, Jugo is kind of cool about it because, you know, Bazby's, like, glaring at him all hatefully. And so Jugo's like, why are you so mad at me? It's not my fault, basically. And then he actually says, I think there's some sort of mistake. And the officer that Bazby was going to fight before is like, oh, watch your tongue. Be honored His Majesty chose you. What possible mistake could His Majesty have made? And Jugo's like, well, I kind of suck as a Quincy. Because I can't even make bow or arrows, and Baz is way better than I am. He's way more fit to be by, you know, His Majesty's side. And so Jugo Bak turns around and, oh yeah, he does have the multiple pupils. I can see them now when he shifts his eyes around his head.
I get maybe the power is there because he's meeting...
He's got his powers fully, I think, at this point, because they haven't had the whole thing where he has to go to sleep for 1,000 years, basically.
Wait, this is 1,000 years ago?
We went over this last
week. I'm so confused. Oh, never mind, just continue.
It still doesn't make any sense.
Okay. Just go on without me.
So Geoff Bockett says, "It is exactly as my eyes see. You still haven't realized what your power is. Of course you can't make a Heilig Bogen, or however you pronounce that pseudo-German term. You are the same as me. You are Quincy with the power to share power." Basically, he is the same as Juhabak. He can loan his power to other people by sacrificing his own. And so he reveals that the reason why Basby is so super awesome talented is because Jugo unwittingly has actually been loaning him his power and allowing him to excel this whole time. So, you know, Juhabak, you know, says, "You know, you have felt your power increasing daily as you spent time with this one. Did you think it was actually your own power? You should thank this one, the one who turned you from being powerless into a genius." And he's like, "Okay, let's go." And Basby gets all pissy and screams and takes out his crossbow and tries to shoot Juhabak.
"I'll kill you to death!"
And Jugo just snatches the arrow out of the air. And then we cut to the present, where he has done exactly the same thing as they've been fighting, and then he cuts Basby across the stomach. Well, that was anticlimactic.
It was weird. I thought this was going to be like a flashback to give us a lot more about Basby, but by the end of it, I was like, fuck this guy. What an asshole.
Well, as it turns out, it's not about Basby. It's about Jugo, which is kind of brilliant, because that's what Baz found out.
Yeah, he's like, poop.
Yeah, you think that the flashback's about Basby? No, it's about Jugo.
I'm just curious. Basby
thinks that the story's about him? No, it's about Jugo.
So, I'm just curious at what point, Juhabak was just like, "I know he tried to kill me once already, but make him one of the Sturmbitter and give him awesome power."
Yes. He's got a cool haircut.
Yeah, give him fingers that explode with fire and... Oh,
not
get
like
stronger.
He's a Pierre Paul, though.
Yeah, different explosions. But, give him my well wishes. In fact, give him that imagination power. That brain the jar ain't using it. Or just used it to make himself more fireworks to blow off his hand. Well, that's... He can't imagine himself a new hand, but he can imagine more fireworks.
Idea. Let's just make the person with the visionary power a brain in a jar so he can't possibly hurt himself with his own stupid imagination powers. Okay? Okay.
I've solved the only dilemma to this power.
Oh, look, now he's imagining a glass of water.
Well, that seems kind of... Oh, hold on, wait there. Nope, there is no ice in the water. He couldn't foresee that. He's now imagining a giant snowball above the glass, slowly leaking into it. Don't think he even realizes that won't actually get ice into the glass either. It's just going to melt and become more water. Just overflow.
Why does he want this glass of water so much anyway? It's not like he can drink it.
Yeah. Your brain in a jar. You're in water all day.
It's not like you can get thirsty. And if you want to enjoy a tasty beverage, why would you imagine water? And it also, why would you not first imagine yourself a method to taste it with? This is not a very imaginative imaginary power. I feel why? Like it's a devastating issue. Oh, damn it, no take-backsies, though.
Why did you imagine yourself thirsty? Why did you do that?
Oh boy. Still crapping on Kremi.
I never want to end.
So yeah, what'd you think of this chapter overall, Chris?
Again, it's you know, Fairy Tail was such a great chapter that it lifted everything up. But it was not god awful. I mean, yeah, it makes Hoshfault a bit more interesting, but it's hard not to look at Hoshfault and just be like, is this guy only, like, getting popularity because he's, like, the, I know there's a term for this kind of character and I can't think of it. Like the
Bishonen.
Yeah, like the Bishonen, sickly, very, like, kind of effeminate-looking character.
I have heard that your Captain Ukitake has died. Well, allow me to introduce to you my fair-skinned, frail, light-haired captain. See?
Yeah, look at him. In his little half shirt. What a big strong man you are.
No, officer, I did not touch that boy.
Alright, Nick. Go ahead,
Fairy Tail, 2 chapters for the price of 1.
I'm so excited, because we didn't get to talk about Fairy Tail last week. The chapter wasn't out, and I don't know exactly for what reason it wasn't out, but it came out, like, I think, like, Sunday or something like that, because I read the first chapter we're talking about this week on Monday, and at that point, that was the only chapter that's out, but they had a regular chapter then on Tuesday, so we have 2 chapters, and I'm so excited that we get to talk about both of them, because the real reason this second chapter is so hilarious, like, it's emphasized so much more if we get to recap the first one. Okay. So, we're going to start with chapter 442, Rules of the Area. And I think I mentioned it last week, but the cover page is Wendy in a bikini, splashing with a water gun. And I can't really spend time on this, Nick, because I can't spend my time kicking turds around at the base while I have a whole mountain of shit to climb up. So, this is like the follow-up to last week, or last time we had this, where Fairy Tail was in the Empire, and they were under specific orders not to attack anybody. They needed to be covert, they needed to behave themselves, not cause an issue. And of course, the first problem they ran into, everybody jumped in and got themselves involved. So this is like the fall.
Now, if they were thinking, then Dornbolt could just go erase memories and, you know, everyone forgets about them. But no. They're just like, okay, you go over there now.
Well, Nick, he can't do that because Dornbolt is too busy fantasizing over the woman who is a cat and the 12-year-old girl in a really creepy moment where he's like, oh, they're so angelic. I was like, they're walking a child.
After a little girl. Come on.
It's like, why is that so enchanting to you? Stop staring at them. But
stare
Dornbolt,
at the older women.
Yeah, least. I guess. You must be a pervert. Be a legal pervert. So basically all Fairy Tail beats up a bunch more guards, and at that point, Urza's like, we must never, you know, we have to really, you know, be vigilant, but I'm gonna go get a fucking bitey at this mango stand, whatever.
Because comic relief.
I don't know if it is a mango stand. I think it's a mango stand. Whatever. It gets destroyed, and that's, like, he has a dream.
My cabbages!
I think he has a dream to build more mango stands, but it explodes. Anyway, this mango stand blew up, and it's a bad deal. Like, it's like, oh, this is really unfortunate. And the person who blows it up is this rather strange-looking guy called Marin Hollow, who we get introduced as being a member of the Albareth Imperial Army Brandish Division. And he seems to have this ability that's like this null magic void zone kind of thing. So anyone who tries to use summoning magic, he can nullify their effects, and then essentially seems to have some kind of basis of control over them, like he can teleport them somewhere else. So, you know, obviously Lucy and Urza both use a magic that requires them to summon something, so he essentially stops their magic from working, and then he's like, you know, of course a pervert, because there's only two kinds of antagonists in Fairy Tail, the ones right. who are perverts and the ones who just suck and boring as fuck. He's the weird perverted kind, so he's like, oh, you all have top marks, oh, and I'm going to send you to my room. And, they disappear in, like, a different bubbly kind of thing. Then Dornbolt comes up, and I think he wants to... His magic is memory-based.
Right.
But apparently he also is using spatial magic. I don't know exactly what. But he just fucking clocks him out. Like, he's like, ew, I can't jerk off to you. I'm not sending you to my sex room. I'm just going to knock you out. So he just fucking baffs him, and Dornbolt's out for the count. He then starts beating up other people. But then, at the end of the chapter, Brandish shows up. Brandish being the leader of the unit that Marin belongs to. And it's revealed that she's part of the Imperial Army Spriggan 12. So she is one of the 12 people at the same level as Fairy Tail's, but that entire continent's strongest mage. Like, this is someone exactly on that high of a level, and, you know, Gray's just like, whoa, this is an overwhelming aura! And Nick, that's how the chapter ends.
Right.
So, Nick, you would assume, with this big of a reveal, this big of a villain, that obviously the next chapter is going to pick up right where we left off. If anything, Hero might need an additional week to get a chapter out, because he has to build up. This is a huge event. He needs to make sure he executes it just right.
Chris, you see, he does pick up right where he leaves off, because you see, when we get the full page shot of Brandish, she's not wearing very much, and the camera is angled to go down her chest into her cleavage, And so Hiro goes, well, obviously I have to follow that up with more cleavage.
Yes. So we follow this up in chapter 443, The Land That Just Vanished, which is a color page opening of course, Lucy, Urza, and Wendy in bikinis building sandcastles.
Which we didn't get enough of in the last three chapters.
Yes. Like, Lucy's, like, just flat out, like, as cheesecake of a butt shot as you could possibly get. Just as shameless as possible.
It's digging in like that.
Yes. And, of course, we get a cover or color opening as well to our fucking Hot Springs episode that we opened up with. I don't know why! There's no reason for this to open up as a Hot Springs episode, but it does. As we find the B-team, you know, Gajio and all of them, have just stopped off at a hot spring that we're cutting to. And it exists, of course, for the point of having a bunch of hilarious jokes. You know, Luvia doesn't want to come in, she's too embarrassed, and then, you know, Levy's like, oh, is that Gray I see over there? And, well, you know, Luvia is like, oh, is Gray-sama here? Let me show him my humongous titties. Oh, wait, Gray is not here. You have made powerful enemy, comrade. You will get yours. And
I like how Luvia is Russian for some reason.
She always struck me as Russian from the first time. She's that fucking hat. It's the hat neck. That's what makes me think she's Russian.
I can see that.
But we cut over to the men's side of the bath, which is just Gajio, Elfman. And for some reason, Ichia's there, the blue Pegasus perfume guy.
With the weird fucking face.
Yeah. And the only reason he's here is to explain to us that Blue Pegasus, the members of the Rajin tribe, which is, you know, Laxus, Siegfried, all those, they joined Blue Pegasus in their downtime. And Ichio gets really upset that they found this out, because he wanted to, like, point out to him in a bigger way, like he wanted to see. Oh, sorry, no. Gajio gets angry about that, so Ichio's like, 1,000 pardons, and then he jumps in the air and says, "My act of contrition is to shove my dick in Elfman's face," because his back's to the screen, so we see his butt, but you can clearly see where his dick is, and it's right in front of Elfman's mouth, which is wide open, screaming out, "Man." Which, to me, I almost felt like it was directed at me, because me and my brother have long, ongoing conversations about shit like this, where you're just like, I found a joke notebook of ours the other day, and there was a joke in it we had spent like 20 minutes on, where it was like a quarters on the ground. You bend over to pick it up, and in the background, there's just a giant penis-shaped missile coming towards you, and you're just like, oh, this quarter's like stuck to the ground. Maybe it'll help if I take off my pants. Like,
what?
Like, it's just like, there's this, a dick about to go somewhere it shouldn't, and I just look at Elfman, I'm like, close your mouth! You're about to get a mouthful of dick! Like, he's just like, man! Oh. So, silliness happens, he punches Ichio, that knocks Gajio across, of course, into the female side, where he lands on his love interest chest, and I believe Gajio is cognitively aware of this, because his comment is, what is this? I'm cushioned by not by much. So he's obviously, I feel like he has to be aware, like, oh, I'm on Levy's tits and I'm going to make a joke about how small they are, because I can't imagine somebody would go flying through something and be like, well, what is this I landed on? It's soft, but not very soft. It's sort of itty-bitty, like a itty-bitty something convention. Is it? Like, it's just this weird line. And then we stop! We're
done!
We're done with the hot springs! This chapter, for some reason, is still going. In fact, it's even longer. It's like an 80-page chapter that just was 10 pages of a hot springs episode for some reason.
Well, yeah, because like they said at the end of the previous chapter, like, next one's going to have a special color opening. It's going to be an extra-large 31-page chapter. All that extra time is just spent on this.
It's no point to it. You'd think with such a big chapter with the character reveal, they'd spend time with it. Because they don't even find Blue Pegasus in this. Like, it's not like we're like, oh, we handled that plot thread. No, they still have to find. It's not like Laxus was there. They're still going to have to actually go to Blue Pegasus to find him. All that was served in this were a couple of fan service jokes and Elfman almost getting violated. So we cut back to the island, where Brandish has shown up. And as you said, she is a woman in a bikini with, like, an overcoat on, and they're all commenting about how strong her magic is. And she just notes, like, I'm just here for some mango gelatin. And they're like, oh, well, that stand was destroyed. And she's like, oh, why? And Marin explains the story of basically why it happened and, you know, everything he's done. And Brandish says specifically, like, no, you bring them back. You know, you do that. And, you know, the guy's like, oh, but I want to keep them. And, you know, she starts showing off his power. Like, the earth starts shaking. Wendy gets flown up in the air along with the kid. And the entire island just completely reconverts. She has, like, some kind of earth magic control, but not like Jura, where it's like, I can, you know, make pillars of earth, like an earthbender or something. Like, she apparently has the ability to just recreate landforms seemingly, like, just instantaneously. Like, it just immediately happens. And she just says, never make me repeat myself. So Marin brings Lucy and Urza back. And I give Hero credit, because it was very clearly a room with some kind of sexual kink to it. We never had to see it. The only suggestion we get that it was weird is Urza's like, oh, that was the most vile room. But we didn't actually have to see the sex bondage dungeon or whatever weird, like, fucking panty museum or whatever bullshit it was. And everyone's just knowing, like, wow, this girl's magic is incredible. Well, let's definitely not fuck with her, except for Natsu, who's like, hey,
oh, yeah,
you darn bolt got beat up. And Brandish, being very reasonable, is like, okay. And she just fucking explodes Marin. Like, he just disappears. The presumption is he's dead. Like, because he just boom, and there's, like, dust particles. And she's like, okay, one for one, we're even now. So she starts to walk away. And Natsu replies with, thank you. Of course, you've gotten rid of someone who was clearly just a weird pervert. Somebody who had nothing to contribute to society beyond the fact that he ogled women. He was clearly a man who was in abuse of his powers. Didn't seem to respect your leadership until you had to make a physical threat against him. You've rid ourselves of a very awful, awful person, so thank you. Actually, no, he's like, how could you do that? He was your friend! And
he's like, no, he wasn't.
And Brandish is like, bitch! I got your friends back. I killed one of my own men to fucking appease your knocked-out douchebag loser over here, and you're still bitching about it! What is your problem? What the fuck do you want me to do? I don't like that guy. He was not my friend. He ogles me all the time. Yes, I wear a bikini around a lot. I am one of the 12 strongest mages on the continent. I also spend a lot of time doing bikini Skinamax movies. I was in Bikini Warriors Aliens Co-Ed 6. Didn't feel like changing my clothes. He still stares at me. I don't want to be judged for it. He's gone now. It was a win-win for everybody. But you're going to sit here and bitch about it? Fuck you. So she basically
that's only just says, oh, she hurt her own Ella, and then that's just kind of it.
Yeah. So she just basically compacts the entire island into what's essentially just a platform beneath her feet. Everybody goes splashing into the water, and she just notes, she's like, there are 12 wizards and all breath on this level. I wouldn't make enemies of us if I were you, fairy tale. And then she, I don't know, she instant transmissions herself away, or she has some teleportation magic or something, and all of Fairy Tail is left to soak in the water and be like, oh, wow, she's so strong.
And they didn't immediately beat her, so.
No, I mean, yes, in that respect, you're like, oh, wow, they set up a big villain and they didn't immediately beat her. I mean, look, it is like on that sense of like, oh, this seems cool, like, you know, she seems really powerful. I have learned from Fairy Tail that if something is not immediately powered by friendship, I shouldn't take much stock in it being called strong. Like, they're like, oh, these are the 12 strongest giants. Well, are they all friends? Like, no, they don't really talk that much. Well, they're gonna get quashed. That's not even a question. It was just such a weird two chapters, because there's the first one, which is like this follow-up, this reaction to what they did. You know, your Kizaru showing up because you punched out a celestial dragon sort of situation, where Brandish shows up at the end of the chapter. It's this big thing. Then the next chapter opens, and it's 10 pages of a fucking Hot Springs episode. And then immediately after that, it's just her killing her own minion, because he's like, you know, I'll be fucking pretty reasonable about this. He is kind of an asshole. He's kidnapping people.
She also says that she knows who they are.
Yeah.
What they want. So she's just like, look, I know what you're here to accomplish. I'll let you leave. And I'll kill my own minion. Don't fuck with us. bye.
Nuts. It's like, but he was your friend! He was an asshole! How many times do we have to get this across? You met this dude for 10 minutes. He was nothing but an asshole. The world is better without him. I found it such an amusing chapter. Like, just the silliness of it all. Like, the time spent introducing this dude with an ability that, like, negates magic just so she could kill him. Because she's like, oh, fine, I guess since Dornbolt's knocked out, I'll murder my guy, too. Whatever. Oh, my God, you guys are so whiny. Oh, I love these chapters, Nick. They were just so ridiculous.
Shall we move on, then?
Yes.
All right, Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, Chapter 125, The Moon Festival. So, the festival begins, and everyone's got their stands and stuff, and we briefly see a few people basically just getting ready for the rush of customers, but then we cut to where Kuga and Soma with Megumi are having their big standoff, and customers start to arrive, and they're like, oh, hey, black pepper pork buns, I want to try that. And the first few customers arrive at Soma's stand, and they're like, oh, so good. And Soma has a flashback to basically a discussion that he had with Nikumi. And, you know, he just going over the meat stuff with her and so on, and practicing all the stuff that he had to do with pepper and oil and so on and so forth until eventually both Nikumi and Megumi thought was really good. And then, flashing back to the present, suddenly Kuga has appeared at the stand. Apparently, Soma didn't even notice him because, like, Kuga's leaning against his cart and Soma's got that, someone has arrived that I didn't see them coming, but he was flashing back. Like, if he was flashing back like that, he was probably just spacing out, so. It's not that terrifying.
All of his food's burning. He's just like, oh, shit!
I'm supposed to actually take care of that. So Kuga says, oh, you know, I gotta say, you know, your idea was really good. It's, you know, a spicy Chinese dish, but at the same time, it's very different from my cooking. And also, it's got incredible juiciness and so on and so forth. It can, you know, make people addicted to it if they try it out. But it's all meaningless if you can't get anybody to eat it. And his stand basically is just so huge that everyone's going for him over Soma's, so, yeah. And so the point that Kuga is kind of mentally making to himself is, you know, this isn't a shokugeki. You aren't guaranteed that the judges, as in the customers, will try your dish. The customers come only to those they know are good, so it's natural that I would beat you like this. So, yeah, I mean, this is kind of something that we basically knew going into this. Of course he's going to have the advantage. He's one of the council 10. He's got this huge thing promoting all his food. So, but it's nice to see him have that cockiness to him. Where he's like, oh, they're not going to try it, so who gives a fuck? Get on my level.
He's such a condescending douche about it, too. He has a moment later in the chapter that's just, like, glorious. He's such a fucking dickbag.
And to make things worse, one of the few customers that someone make me had, I mean, they turn around and they're like, oh, hey, it's the 8th seats cooking. I'm going to go try that booth. And they're like, no!
Which is weird, because, like, all of his stuff, I'm like, well, that looks fucking awful. Water, spinach, and hot sauce? Fuck that shit. That pork bun, though, Nick? I don't even know what a pork bun is. I can gather, but I've never had one. But holy shit, I want to, like, fly to China and buy one right now. And I know that's a very expensive plane ticket, and I could probably just make it at home for much cheaper. But holy shit, I want that one. Which is an even more expensive trip, because then I have to, like, find a trip, like a plane that crosses into different realities solely so I can go into Shokugeki no Soma to get one. But I want that fucking pork bun that they're eating. It looks, holy shit, so good. Like, I haven't been hungry for a manga in a while, because Toriko's food recently has been very abstract. Like, here's the liquid, the concentrated liquid soup of opposite. And I'm like, that doesn't make me hungry.
I don't want to have a food that turns me into a chick and also dead.
Yeah, that's one of those at a time might be okay for a little bit, but I don't, definitely both at once is too much. But no, this pork bun.
Also, I thought this was supposed to be a fruit. What the fuck?
Yeah, this, how is this a soup? This is weird.
Basically, the day rolls on, Kuga gets a ton of customers, and at one point he goes back to Soma's stand, and he's like, oh, one ticket, two tickets, lots of tickets. Oh, you got so many. Good for you. Lots of people came to try your yummy food. I'm so proud to see my junior have such success. The Institute's future looks so, so bright, and he holds up, like, a giant stack of bills as money flying all around it.
It's such a fun, like, his face while he's doing it, he's just like, look how many you got. Oh! Good for you! Like,
oh. I'm sure that the future will be good and your hands are off, money.
Like, he's like literally just raining money around him, but he still has this face. He's like, oh, good for you! Like, the first time your baby takes a dump, you're just like, you reached the potty! You didn't poop on the floor in your underwear! Yay!
Keep in mind that Soma and Megan are 1 year younger than him.
Oh, man, I love this guy. He's such a fuck.
So yeah, Megumi's like, oh, there's such a huge gap, and Kuga says, if you hadn't insisted on coming after me and had instead gone quietly to some other area, you might have been able to enjoy a fun, happy, and profitable festival. Pointing out, of course, that Soma is also putting himself in danger of getting expelled. So Megumi has one of her typical, you know, freakouts, like, oh, you might get expelled, Soma! And Soma says, oh, I figured I wouldn't be able to put up a good fight right from the outset, but, man, I never expected we'd only sell this little. And he's just kind of chuckling to himself, and Megumi's still freaking out. It's like, oh, no. And then she thinks, oh, he must have some kind of plan.
He's like, well, I'm fucked. He just puts on his hat and, like, gets a briefcase, starts leaving.
Megumi, before I leave, I have to tell you.
Remember to send my key. Remember to mail me my keys.
Actually stares into his eyes really hesitantly. Give me, like, one of your recipes. I like your vegetables and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Can you tell Erina I have a crush on her?
I can normally run into her whenever I need to, but now,
I'm going to look really bad. I made a big deal out of this fucking pork bun thing.
I don't want her to just go, I told you so.
You won't believe this? This cart cost me $17,000. For the day.
I don't actually know how much that is, because I don't know how to convert to yen. That's like one each, right?
I don't want to say this. I'm really good at making food. I'm terrible at finances. So, if you could just do me a solid real quick and just lend me $20,000. Where's the extra $3,000?
I want to take Erina out on a date.
Just breaking her heart more, stomping on it with fucking cleats.
How much money can you spend on one date? Well, actually, Nikumi and Hisako are going to be there too.
It's going to be a lot of pretty girls. But if you can make sure you don't show up, that'd be great.
Yeah, like it's actually going to be all the girls that I know here except you. Also, Ishiki's going to be there too. Fucking dog. But anyway, at the end of the chapter, Soma takes the cart and just wheels it off. And so a few people actually take notice of this. Like, where'd the cart go? So, yeah, that's the end of it. So, I guess there's a couple of theories that I have about this. One is maybe he's going to try and concentrate demand by, you know, getting word of mouth, artificially making his product more rare. The other is he's just going to go to a couple of different locations and spread the word and then come back to the central place.
That would actually be a cool... That actually is probably what's going to happen, because they made a big deal about these other areas.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you're like, I know that these are important characters there, the Aldinis and all that, but I don't feel like they're going to have all that much to do, like, in the grand. Like, you're not building up enough that I'm like, oh, there's a separate storyline going on over there. I think it's just going to be, hey, he's also going to go to the market district and all that. That is a good idea. Nick, you're smart. This is why we need to have you on the show. You're there to read and to be really smart.
Okay. Thank you, I guess.
I'm just the clown. You're the man, the myth. And you know what? You can be the legend too. I'm going to make you the Holy Trinity, Nick.
That's the Holy Trinity?
Well, it's my Holy Trinity. You don't want to be the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. There's a lot of responsibilities with that. A lot of sinners you have to forgive.
Let's move on to My Hero Academia. number 49, Midoriya and Shigaraki. So last time, Deku basically figured out, oh, I've got to have all of my power, well, not all my power, but, you know, my entire body flowing with the partial amount of my power, as opposed to just bursting it through little parts of it at a time. Gran Torino is like, okay, well, let's spar. Let's see if you can get me within the next 3 minutes. And before that time is up, you know, try and hit me. Starts to bounce around before he even finishes that introduction, and kicks Deku in the back of the head. Because hard knocks, boy.
Fuck you, kiddo.
So Deku bounces around. Not Deku. Gran Torino bounces around, attacking from a bunch of different angles. And Deku's trying to figure out, like, oh, I've got to, you know, get the power flowing and so on and so forth. I've got to buy some time. I know. And he dies under the couch. Our hero, ladies and gentlemen.
Couch will protect me. Couch never betrays me.
Gran Torino he basically gets down on the table to attack the couch. And then Deku launches the couch up at him. And then tries to attack him from there. So... let's see. Oh, actually, I'm trying to figure out what's going on, actually, as I'm doing this. Basically, he concentrates his power into one arm in order to launch the couch up, then uses the opening that provides him to gather it into his entire body and tries to attack. But Gran Torino is too fast. He bounces around a bit, tries another plan to attack him, but Gran Torino manages to just dodge out of the way as Deku strikes him from above. And then he bounces off the wall, and while Deku is helpless in midair, he kicks him in the stomach, because Gran Torino is just kind of a douche like that.
Old men are assholes, Nick. Yeah.
And so the 3 minutes are up, and Deku was able to land a shot, although Gran Torino thinks privately to himself after, you know, going, come on, yeah, get better, kid, basically. But, you know, he's
Mickey from Rocky. What are you doing there, you bum? Get up!
Like, oh, you know, he forced me to dodge. It's been a while since anyone actually managed to do that. So, showing that Deku is actually making some pretty good progress already. So, let's see.
And we cut away, I think, then to the villain bar.
Yeah, that's what happened.
I mean, I don't think that's the name of the bar. I feel like if it did, it would probably wouldn't get a whole lot of customers. And like, sounds like bad guys go there. Let's not go there. Let's go to the hero bar over here.
So, Stain.
That's yes.
Yes. He is still hanging out with Hand on Face Guy and Shadow Face Dude. And so, you know, he says, oh, you know, you don't have conviction. You know, if you want to accomplish anything, you have to have conviction. And he has Hand on Face Guy on the ground, pinned with two knives on either side of his neck. And he's like, you know, Hand and Face is like, oh, you're so strong. Kurogiri, send him away with your teleportation power. And he says, no, can't. It's probably his quirk.
You know, I'm sorry, I can't. I'm like, can you really not, or are you just lazy? I guess we'll find out. Maybe you won't. You might be dead.
So, let's see. Fuck. Hand on Face Guy Stain basically says, oh, the word hero has lost its original meaning. In this rotten society, rife with fakers and shams, criminals who aimlessly throw their weight around too, you're all targets of my purge. And Hand on Face Guy is like, grab the blade, and it starts to crumble in his hands. And he says, you talk a lot about conviction. I've got nothing so grand as convictions, but I have to say what drives me, I'd say it's All Might. That piece of garbage and the society that worships him, I want to crush them all into dust. That's my conviction. And Stain gets kind of freaked out because, like, well, just disintegrated my knives. And you're trying to disintegrate me now, too. I'm going to get away from you now.
Dick move.
Yeah. So Stain kind of just goes, our respective goals couldn't be further apart, but destroying the status quo, that's the one ambition we have in common. So, yeah. And so Hand on Face Guy is like, well, I'm the type you hate most, so go away. And Stain is like, no, I was just testing your sincerity. People show their true colors when death is staring them in the face. You are an odd one, but your will. I can see the seed of some warped conviction within you. I wonder what that seed will yield. So basically he's going to join up with them and probably kill them at some point when it's no longer convenient for them to be joined up. But he's like, yeah, I'll be your ally for now.
It's cool, because you don't often, like, generally in Shonen series, you don't get many scenes with the villains outside of, like, here I am, here's my cool power, you know, here I am losing to the hero. You know, you don't get, like, often scenes where they actually have, like, conversations and motivations and things like that between themselves. I think that's actually pretty cool to get to see it in person. Plus, Stain just seems like a really cool-looking dude.
Yeah.
I think it was Lizodiac who mentioned it to me. He looks a lot like, I can't remember his name. It's one of the tribal people from Small Soldiers. There was, like, the weird one that, like, spun around and screamed a lot, the crazy one.
Hmm.
Ah, I'm trying to remember his name.
Insaniac?
That might be it. I mean, he was definitely insane. I mean, it seems like a name that's too on the nose, but...
it was Small Soldiers.
Yeah, I'm like, it was a children's movie, so I guess it was, like, what, Chip Hazard? Like, they weren't coming up with really creative stuff.
There was an archer named Archer.
Insaniac is the one. Yeah, he's got, like, this weird... He got, like, that weird half-mask and, like, the hair that pokes out of the top.
And he made a lot of jokes that weren't funny.
You know what? It's been a while. I imagine he was some kind of comedic classic of the 90s. Probably made a lot of very topical references. Probably made a Genie and Aladdin joke at some point. Maybe a joke about Pogs and Trapper Keepers. All the things that were hot at that time.
Pogs. So, Stain asked to be sent back to Hosu, where Ida is, still in the Division Scouting Talent Agency place, you know. So... he's thinking to himself, like, I knew as soon as I started researching. At each of the 7 locations Stain has attacked thus far, he's killed or injured at least 4 heroes. What's his objective? I don't know if it's an omen or not, but here in Hosu, my brother was the only victim to speak of. Tenya, I'm sorry. There's still a chance that he'll appear here once again. So come on. I'll take you out myself. And, he says this with like after he's removed his glasses and he's looking all intense too. So presumably this is how Ida is going to die.
He can't die. I don't think that can happen. If that flashback or that narrative was supposed to be him, it'd be really weird if he was dead and being like, I really regret that day. Like, oh right. Shit, you're dead. Ghosts can't talk. But I definitely feel like we're gonna get something out of this. I feel like he's gonna make a decision here that's going to put him down a path that's going to make it so he can't become a hero. You know, he's gonna do something. He's gonna become Sasuke. He's gonna become this anti-hero character, and that's what's gonna kind of ultimately, like, put him down a path he didn't want to be down.
Let's see. Naruto.
Yes, the end of Naruto, the 7th Hokage and the Scarlet Spring.
Yeah, the second end. Yeah.
Yes. Strangely enough, I don't actually recall there being any springs that were scarlet. I mean, it's probably supposed to be symbolic, I guess, of Sakura's kid?
Sarada, yeah.
Yeah, but... I don't know. I was really hoping there'd be a spring, and they're like, oh my god, it's made out of sangria!
Like a spring, like a metal spring coiled up and stuff.
Well, if that was made out of sangria, that I feel like that'd be hard to drink. Like, you're constantly trying to drink it and it's bouncing away. You're like, come back! I want to be irresponsible and drunk at 6 a.m.
Okay, so yeah. Chapter 700 plus 10, reflected in those eyes. Last time, Sarada punched a bunch. And a whole bunch of clones got knocked away. And at this point, Naruto just kind of grabs one of the Shin clone's bladed things and stares into his eyes, which allows the Shin to see Kurama staring back at him. And then they all simultaneously wet their pants and are like, I don't want to find you more.
I love that Naruto basically is just like, stop it! And they're like, alright. Like, well, that was pretty easy in the end, I guess. So all we had to do was just yell stop it at them. They're like, yeah, I don't know why we didn't think of it before. But that's all they needed to do. The Shin Army's defeated. All their murderous rampage is done. And they're all going to go live off in an orphanage now with Kabuto. as he specifically notes, like, I need names for all of you. Fatty, Ugly, Joey Fatone, Ugly Number Two. And the rest of you figure out your own names. I don't think they do. Probably all still call each other Shin. They're a weird family.
So, yeah, Naruto says, stop. And they're like, mm-hmm. And then they're like, okay, what are we going to do now with all these guys with Sharingans and stuff now? Yeah.
What are we going to do with them, Nick?
Yeah. So, Sakura grabs onto Sarada and is like, oh, I'm so glad you're okay, and she hugs her and stuff. And then she says to Sarada, Shizune basically told me what was going on, but geez, of course you're my bona fide offspring, silly child. Well, why couldn't Shizune just say that?
Shizune's like, oh, I forgot, actually. I couldn't remember, so whoops, I'm guessing pin a lot of this on me, but don't, because I'm on some thin ice at work, and this is probably going to push me over.
So Sarada says, yeah, I know, but, you know, I understand that as long as we love each other and our feelings are connected, it's okay. So then she goes over to Sasuke and he's like, do you think your feelings are connected with mom's? And Sasuke doesn't look in her eyes. He goes, yeah.
He's like, I guess I'll tap that if she gives it, you know.
So Sarada says, well, how can you say that for sure? And Sasuke says, because you exist, Sarada. There you go, everybody. If you need to know your love is genuine, just knock a girl up.
Hey, they got married, Nick.
They did get married. That's probably... Get married and have a kid. Rush into everything. That is the way you show you're committed.
This is as romantic as Sasuke is going to get. Because he like just makes a thing. He's like, here are the reason. Here are the proof that I love her. So, anyways, I'm going to go get going again for another 10 years or so. And I'm not even going to give your mother the fucking courtesy tap on the forehead on the way out either. Suck it. Hashtag villain. Thug Life Lucia. And he just fucking walks out. I always hate Sasuke. But God, he taps me on the forehead and my female loins just melt and I can't be angry at him. Until he's gone and I'm angry at him again. But he taps me on the head again and it's back.
It's only so long the head tap can last, okay?
But goddamn, does it last.
So then they're like, okay, what are we going to do with all these guys? Let's take them to Kabuto's orphanage.
That'd be great if, like, Sasuke and Naruto turn to each other. They're like, what are we going to do with these? Bail? Bail. They just leave them there. Like, they're just like, oh, where are we?
It's like, no, wait. I have to leave a shadow clone here to look after them.
It'd be great to, like, where are we? Oh, the hidden sand? Oh, that's their problem then. All right, let's go, guys.
Gara's like, ah, fuck you, Uzumaki!
You dick!
So yeah, Kabuto's heading up the orphanage where he grew up now.
It's appropriate.
What?
It's appropriate. I like it. It's
Is
actually,
it really, though?
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, come on, he's an orphan.
If everyone can be redeemed, then it's, I guess, the right place for him to end
up. He escaped the genjutsu because he learned to think differently and not be evil.
He looks too much like Orochimaru for me to be okay with him being around a bunch of kids.
Well, Orochimaru clearly is allowed to be around anything. He can just hang around, so, I mean, I guess this is fair enough.
Orochimaru should have just been like, why are you one of the two members of the I've forgotten their title.
Sages? Something sages?
Hang on. Sanin. That was it. They gets to live. Him and Tsunade and Jiraiya. Jiraiya died and Orochimaru gets to live.
Well, yeah. Rogue Sacrifice. Something like that. Have we seen Tsunade? Or Tsunade? In either this series or the end of the last series?
Yeah, she showed up in like the retirement home.
That's right.
But yeah, we haven't seen her in this series. So
she could theoretically be dead.
Theoretically. Yeah. She's like a super medic nin, so... Anyway, so everyone arrives back at Konoha, and Chocho suddenly spots out the corner of his eye. He's like, "Ah, a slim guy! Hey, are you my papa?"
And everyone's like, "Oh, right, this quote-unquote storyline."
So Choji turns around, and apparently he used his powers to become slim and stuff. And he's like, oh, is that really you? And he was like, oh, right, you've never seen him when he got slim. Yeah, well, he hasn't had to do this, you know, in front of you before, I guess. So he's like, oh, what is this? Is this some secret Akimichi clan jutsu? Well, yeah, I guess you could. I want to learn it! Teach it to me! Okay, honey, okay.
Being kind of pushy and mean about this. Teach it to me, you fat fuck!
Then again, I did marry your mother, so...
Should have seen this coming.
So, people start to head, I guess, in opposite directions. Sasuke and Sakura and Sarada all go home, and they actually have a meal together. It's like, oh, we get to spend time together as a family. For once!
So, honey, how was the last 10 years of school?
Tell me everything.
Make it quick, though. I'm leaving in 30 minutes. Seconds. Oh, yeah. Did I say seconds or minutes? It's seconds.
We literally get one panel of them together, and then a time passes panel, and then, so when are you going to be home again, Dad?
Uh-oh. Here's your forehead tap. Make it last.
He doesn't even answer. He just gives her a hug. He's just like, oh, Dad. No, don't make that face. Tap. Till next time. So I was like, oh, you lost me.
He pops back up with Suzanne. You only get one.
Sakura, like, here, have your lunch, honey. And they're like, she, like, blushes and looks at him and stuff. So he's like, okay, see you, bye.
Like, she's holding out her head, like, now me. And he's like, come on. This is the one fucking consideration you can give me for presumably the years you're going to leave me alone with no one to care for this child with. And, you know, presumably I'm going to be sexually frustrated and emotionally starved. Just give me that tap that I need to get me through the next... No? Okay. You fuck. It's like, but don't worry, I'm going to eat your food, so that means I love you.
We didn't even do it while you were here.
You were here for a day. You didn't bang me at all. You are what, the
why
worst.
Why don't you just come out to see me if you want to do that? Shut up!
She's like, I did.
It's established you know where to find me. So, anyway. Later on, Sarada's in school. And Bolt sits down next to Sarada and is like, oh, thanks. And she's like, what for? You delivered that lunch for me. It's like, oh, yeah. I forgot about that. But Sarada actually says, no, I should be thanking you because I was able to figure out my goal in life because of that. And so he's like, well, what is that goal? Well, since delivering box lunches to everyone in the village is not practical, instead I'm going to become Hokage. Which is the weirdest way I've ever heard of someone building up to that statement.
She's like, well, I don't want to be a pizza delivery guy for the rest of my life, so I guess I'll be governor.
And Bolt is like, lame. Hokage for losers.
She's like, your dad's Hokage. He's like, yeah, I know. What a loser.
Exactly. Then we cut over to Orochimaru's lair, where Karin is chewing out Suigetsu. And she's like, what? No, I didn't give birth to Sarada. Well, what about this umbilical cord? It's from Sakura and Sarada. He's like, what? Yeah, there was a time Sakura chased after Sasuke and they traveled together, and Sarada just happened to be born at my hideout. So, but wait, so, okay. But you were Sasuke crazy and stuff. And she says, well, that's what's important to me is that Sasuke is happy. Besides, girls can be friends too, you know. Jerry Lawler disagrees with you. All women hate each other deep down. Have you never seen a Divas match?
They're always angry about some man or making out with each other. That's the only... If I were to base all of my logic on how females work from WWE, that's the only conclusion I can come from. Yeah. You've either stolen my boy or... I want you to stop touching me in the bad places, so I need to have you in a wrestling match.
Or I want you to touch me in the bad places. That's yes. How you tell if they're a good person. Women in this. Anyway, so Suigetsu is like, okay, so does that mean you're over Sasuke? And she doesn't really answer, but she says, look, bonds and connections come in all sorts of shapes. Now go apologize to Sarada. And bring your new glasses.
Does she get those new glasses, Nick? It looks like she does at the end of it. No, they don't. Those look like the same fucking glasses.
Well, she's like, she also is like really happy because, and it, interestingly enough, the last page in the chapter is the color page. But it's kind of appropriate because we get to see Sarada looking all happy because she's got a picture of her family together for once.
Yeah, presumably this photo was taken while they were all there, so Sasuke had time to take a photo, not much else. But no, it's actually a sweet end to the chapter, you know, kind of a cool way to go out. Kishimoto didn't use his color page to show Sarada in a bikini fucking at hot springs or making some luxurious sandcastle with their butt out, and for that I applaud him, because other people do not have that same resistance.
He was over there, I was like, how old is she? 11. Oh, come on, man.
I guess I could put her in, like, a grandma wig or something like that. Jeez.
Oh, God. Yeah, I really like this. It was a nice conclusion to the story of, you know, this whole epilogue saga. And it was nice to have that little detail about the umbilical cord explained perfectly. You know, it was like, that umbilical cord is actually from when Sarada was here, so that is why it's a fucking 100% match, you idiot.
Dummy dumb. I mean, this entire series, I think, it ended a little bit kind of not... I guess maybe a little abruptly would be the way it kind of... It was had sort of a weird climax, but it's like, it's an entire army of ninjas! We beat them!
And we won.
Yeah. Good job, team. Like, it was no real... Like, I guess it's because the real... enemy in all this is actually going to be in the Boruto movie that's coming out. Like, that's like what this is all kind of really for. But
well, the actual enemy was the original Shin clone.
Yeah, but they noted that there was some antagonist foe out there, right, that Sasuke was searching for that was supposedly stronger than even Kaguya. Right. And I don't imagine that was
which
the
is why
Shin.
Sasuke is still on his mission at the
yeah.
end of all this.
So that I think was supposed to be the lead into whatever the Boruto movie is going to be.
Well, the poster that we get in the issue of Shonen Jump features someone in the background with all white skin and their Rinnegan coming out of their palms. So, yeah.
But, no, I liked it a lot. I think this was Kishimoto with a lot more tight writing than we saw through a lot of some of the later parts of Naruto. I think he did a good job, you know, characterizing these various, you know, adults and making their children, well... making Sarada compelling. Cho-Cho was just awful, but I also particularly like that this was a story about Sarada. I think that was just a nice touch that was really well appreciated. And, you know, by the end of it, it's still hard to be like, Sasuke's such a great dad, but it's still like, you know, he has a touching moment with his kid. He's just the guy who's never really going to be a very, you know, emotionally supportive guy, but he cares, and that's, you know, it's just nice to know that there's a happy ending in Konoha.
Right.
I'm not going to see the movie, so this is the end of the story as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I did convince you that we should do the other movie whenever that becomes available.
Ah, right, fuck. I guess we are doing movies. Never mind, then. I guess the story continues for me.
Very briefly on Nisekoi, someone confessed their feelings to Raku. Progress can be made now.
Maybe she actually will die.
Maybe she will.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, they were just like, oh, this girl...
This lighthearted comedy harem series turns really dark.
Like, this girl isn't working. What are we going to do? Kill her off. Don't. Make her impress her love first, then kill her off. Oh, you evil.
One Piece, chapter 792, on hands and knees. Everyone's happy.
Which is also the name of the porno movie that Brandish is in this week. Well, on hands and knees, part 17, but, you know.
She's empowered. She's fine with it.
She's making a lot of money for this. You don't get it.
Anyway, so everyone is happy because Doflamingo has been defeated. Everyone, that is, except for Burgess, because, well, Sabo beat him. Just kicked his ass all over the place, apparently.
Yeah, that was not as much of a fight as I thought it was going to be.
Nope. So, Burgess is like, ah, so aren't you going to finish me? And Sabo's like, nah, it's all over. Ah, you're all too soft. Oh, you want to know what Ace said right before we had him to the Navy after our captain defeated him at Banaro Island?
Well, he said, egg, I dreamed I was old, but that before that, he said something about don't tell your brother.
Cut away, come back. You're going to laugh when you hear this. Hang on, I gotta take this. anyway, yeah. When Ace learned that he was gonna be executed, he said, "Don't tell my brother." What a fool! He had no idea the value of his life. Of course they're going to report the entire world that the infamous Fire Fist Ace was brought to justice. The military made sure to get 120% of what his life was worth. Hey, stop grabbing my face. Stop it. No. Ow!
This looks like it's going to hurt.
It's really going to hurt. Please don't use your fire powers.
Can you let me just casually kill you with this knife so I can take your devil fruit power? Come on, don't be a dick.
Okay. Really? No.
Boom!
Fire. So yeah, Burgess tries to sucker him in by taunting him like that. And he tries to stab him with his superpower steely knife. And Saibo's like, "Ah, I've had enough regrets." And then he just blows him away with a fire fist. And Burgess flies a long distance away. And Saibo just says, "I was gonna let you go, but Ace here said you deserved it." Yeah. And then he answers Koala's call, and they talk for a bit. Not really about anything. They're just gonna beat up. I think that's everything. Yeah. So cut around to all of the defeated members of the Don Quixote family, as well as Doflamingo himself, who is surrounded by Marines who tie him up in Sea Stone. Looks like he's actually done. I guess he's actually lost. Parvey didn't really believe it, actually, because he was built up so much, actually.
Ah, no. The moment somebody goes crashing through the ground, or up through the ground, they're done. They're donezies, Nick. I'm just shocked. I really thought this was going to be somebody from Blackbeard's crew down there first was going to take his devil fruit. That's what I thought was going to happen. Because it's a pretty fucking strong fruit. I thought they'd be all over that. But I guess their one dude was busy trying to take a fruit even stronger, and he's like, I kind of botched this one up, guys.
Sorry. Shouldn't have just tried to go one on one.
Could somebody maybe stock up on some surplus of alloy, because I'm going to really need it. This hurts. Everything hurts.
I'm talking like fifth degree burns over here.
I can't stop crying.
Okay. Vice Admiral Maynard of Naval Headquarters actually addresses everybody and basically transmits to, I guess, the entire world from Dressrosa. And he says, "What you see here behind me is the current state of Dressrosa," which is, you know, most buildings not there anymore, just all rubble. Yeah. So it was like, "Oh, what does that mean?" It means the town's been destroyed, you idiot.
Yeah, it's not. What do you mean? What does it mean? Come on. Keep your shit together, please.
So, a whole bunch of people approach King Riku, and so he says, "Look, I can't return to the throne, even though everyone knows the truth now." They're like, "No, you're the only king for this trophy country. We've had enough of violence. What if everyone in the kingdom shared your way of thinking? Would you do it then?" And he's like, no, I can't do it. You know, my ideals are brittle and weak, and this has been proved by this whole debacle. And they say, "We don't care if we fall into ruin. We want you to be the king who won't fight. We want you to resist war. If it causes our land to collapse, well, we're willing to risk that."
And, one guy in the back to be like, "I kind of care about if we fall into ruin. How about we not do that, please?"
And there's a guy right next to him who's like, "My house is gone."
Just one dude in the back like, "I was saying, Boo-erns."
So King
Elizabetho, or Elizabello.
Yeah, Elizabello, right. So, yeah, he's like, "Ugh."
He's Charlie Brown. He's like, "Ugh! I really wanted to beat Doflamingo."
Basically, he shows up, and then someone else, one of the soldiers says, "Oh, you have to return to the palace, King Riku. You know, the transponder snails from the nearby kings are ringing off the hook." And Elizabeth says, "I told them all that King Riku would be returning," and everyone is overjoyed by this. So, you know, everyone's saying, "You know, come on, come back to us. You are Riku Doldo, the king of miracles." And then Fujitora comes up, and he says, "Oh, yes, good King Riku. We can't go having you take all the blame for the hell Doflamingo raised. The force responsible for letting that vicious pirate hold official reign under the authority of the warlords of the sea system is none other than the world government. People of the kingdom, people of the royal family, allow me to most humbly apologize on behalf of the government." And he and all the marines behind him bow to Riku in apology. And he says that we have done you a terrible disservice. So, and also, of course, everyone sees this, because it's still being broadcast. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a whole bunch of people are freaking about this. The newspapers are freaking out. It's like, "Oh, come on, major news from Dressrosa. You know, Admiral Fujitora of Naval prostrating himself in apology," and so on and so forth. And, of course, other news that breaks out. Law and Luffy done fucked shit up, and so they are on a poster together.
Presumably, big bounty increases are about to come out.
Probably by a lot.
Yeah, well, they did defeat one of the most, like, wanted men, but also one of the most prestigious men in the world government, so it's going to be a pretty substantial increase, I imagine, for both of them.
Well, also, they're allies, so, yeah.
It's a pretty big dangerous thing going there. It's also pretty cool seeing that Fujitora is presumably another honorable Marine along the same line of Aokiji. Mm-hmm. We don't really know much about this guy. We know he's one of the two new admirals picked in place of Ikanu when he rose up to head admiral, but we haven't known a lot about him. We saw he was willing to kind of play by the rules when he was basically going to let Doflamingo go when he's like, man, we're going to see how this goes, and then I'll bring the Marines in, but essentially, like, I'm not going to get involved fighting against you. But seeing this here, obviously this was a method of him saying, if I go to the Marines first, they're going to try to cover this up. I'm going to make a statement by publicly apologizing and having it broadcast so it can't be hidden. So I think that's a very cool way of showing that this guy has some honor and morals to stand on. So I think that's done a good job to making him a interesting character going forward. I have to feel like the Green Bull, though, is going to be a complete asshole. Like, I can't imagine Ikanu's, like, picking up two dudes who are like, nah, he's noble, upstanding guys. The other dude's like, I punch kittens and kill pirates. Like, well, I really support one of the things you do, and I'm really going to be okay with you doing the other one so long as you keep beating up pirates. But I like this chapter. I liked it quite a lot. I think that it said some cool stuff in it. I think I'm excited for where this is maybe going. I don't think we're ending this arc quite yet.
No, there's still some wrap-up to go through.
So. We have some wrap-up. We're, of course, going to get the post-arc. Like, here's the other things going on in the world. And, Nick, I think we're probably not going to see the end of this arc for about another 2 months. Because I believe we're going to be getting a Bartolomeo flashback soon.
Because you want him to join the Straw Hats.
I feel like he's going to be joining the Straw Hats, and from that, they're going to have a backstory to explain why he's...
Can't have a Straw Hat without a tragic backstory. So.
It's going to happen at one point or the other. I feel like it's going to be coming up soon. Just like how we got Frankie's flashback right before he joined in Water 7, even though he was around the whole time, I feel like that's what we're going to get here, too.
Well, and also there are some Straw Hats that actually kind of just hung around with the crew, and then when they actually officially joined, they had their flashback. So he might... If he is going to join, he might travel with them a bit first.
Very possible.
So, there's no Toriko this week.
No Toriko. I don't remember them saying it was going to be off this week, but, yeah.
All right, let's move on then to World Trigger. Chapter 108, Yuzuru Emma. So, Toma is kind of like... admiring his work with the target, making a smiley face. He's like, oh, this is my first time sniping with a kitty on my head. That was a refreshing experience.
Such a weird way of saying that. Like, he's just like, I crossed that off my bucket list.
He's like, hey, Narasaki, you should try this. It's fun. He's like, no.
I hate cats.
Meanwhile, Yuzuru, or Emma, they're everyone's admiring his star target. And like, oh man, this is why you're... But this is, you know, why you rank low in practice then. You know, you're actually really skilled. And Yuzuru just says, I'm just messing around. But Chika says, oh no, that you can really shoot wherever you want. And so Toma at that point comes up and he's like, ah, look at you, all popular with the ladies. You've got a point. He's got like three girls his age all going, you're so cool. So he's like, yeah. Yeah, you can. I hope you guys will be friends with him because he's kind of a loser. So everyone introduces themselves, and Hat Girl.
I think I've forgotten her name. Not Natsumi.
Yes, spread it.
No, what was her name?
Spread it.
Sniper. What's Natsumi? Yeah, Natsumi's the other sniper.
No, Natsumi's sniper. Because she's part of the Natsumi squad, right?
That's Nasu squad.
Nasu squad. Whatever. Nasu squad sniper. Everyone's going to be mad at Nick this week. So.
You're just somewhere out there fucking.
Annalisa.
Annalisa's just screaming at you. Actually, she didn't care much for Nasus. Well, she didn't care for this character, so she might not be too upset. Akane, that was her name.
So Akane is like, oh, have you heard of her? She's the Tamakoma Cannon Girl. And, have you seen the match logs? And he's like, no, I don't really watch videos. Oh, is Pompadour Guy your mentor? And he's like, yes, I am. And you and him is like, no, he's not. He just likes to pretend he is. Oh. He says, my only mentor is Hatohara. Everyone's like, Hatohara? Because Chika, of course, recognizes that as being the person who went to the other world with her brother. So everyone starts to kind of distribute, and Akane is like, we won't lose next time that we face each other, Chika. And she says goodbye. And it's like, that's kind of an optimistic way of looking at things, that she thinks that they'll actually get to match up against each other again.
She's like, bitch, we're going A rank. See if you guys get your shit together.
Well, I'm more pointing out because Akane is being transferred out.
Yeah.
Basically, after the whole sniper squad meeting is done, Toma takes Emma and is like, help, not Emma. I'm sorry. I got confused because they both have white hair. Too many people with fucking white hair! God damn it!
Yeah. Yuma, can you dye and get black hair again? It'd be one less thing for me to keep track of.
He takes Izuho aside and instructs her, and he's like, okay, aim a little bit more to the right and then shoot. And, oh, wow, I got a bullseye. He's like, yeah, just give her actual advice on how she's got hunter flaws and stuff. So it's nice to see him actually being serious a little bit.
You're like, oh, this guy isn't, like, a monumental asshole all the time. He actually has, like, good traits to him.
And then Chika actually talks with Yuzuru, and because she asks, what was your mentor Hatohara like? And he says, oh, she apparently got sidelined by the top brass, so she's not border anymore. Which, of course, brings up the point that nobody really knows what happened to Hatohara outside of, like, four people at their level. And so he says that she was trying to make the away team. She passed the selection exam, but then they took that right away from her whole team because Hatohara was unable to shoot people. But Yuzuru actually points out, she was so good that she could shoot the enemy's weapons and get the win instead of actually shooting them. Which, peaceful sniper requires considerably more talent than lethal sniper. So, there you go. So, even though she wasn't very good in points, he thinks that she was actually the very best sniper that was in the entire border. And, he's like, you're just like everyone else. You think that she's worthless if you can't shoot people. And Chika says, oh no, I'm actually too scared to shoot people too. And Yuzuru's like, aren't you in Tamakoma? Yeah. Are you sure you want to tell me that? Because we're going to go up against each other.
No. I didn't mean to. I can't stop shooting people is what I meant to say. I have an addiction.
If I had a gun, bang.
I would shoot you right now. He's like, you're holding a gun right now. You know what? My hands are kind of tired, so I'm not going to do it right now, but I will shoot you later, because that's what I can do. I love shooting people. I can shoot people. Anyway, I need to go forever. Bye!
meanwhile, Yuma is talking with Murakami, and he's like, okay, so Tachikawa's the number one attacker, and Kisama's number two, and you're number four, so does that mean Kagura's number three? And he's like, no, actually, he's like 20th. But you said he's better than you. How can he be 20th if he's better than you? Well, look, see, those three are the ones that I can't really, do very good well against. And also, I can't really beat Konami, but she's on a different level. Yeah. What about Jin? Haven't fought him. He's kind of terrifying. And so he says, well, look, the reason why Kagura is actually ranked number 20, well, you'll see when you meet him. And good luck when you do.
We meet him literally 2 minutes later.
So
actually, it's worth noting that when he's fighting Murakami, they show the scoreboard, and you can see it was an even match. They did 15 rounds. It was an even match going into the 11th round, and then Murakami wins 4 out of 5. So kind of showing off that his ability to get better as time goes on makes him better than Yuma in that regard.
Right. The more he fights against someone type of thing.
And I also kind of put an interesting thing here, too, where it's like, oh, yeah, I can, you know, I have the, this is number one, this is number two. Like, oh, then this guy must be number three. Like, no, that's someone else, but he's here. So it's a cool way to build this character up, but also leave that hole open for someone else. Although I don't know if that's supposed to be Konami or not.
I thought the Konami and them were A-rank.
They are, but this includes A-rank, because Kazama's in there. And Tachikawa, they're both A-rank.
Oh, right, overall, right. Hmm.
Maybe Konami's S-rank, I don't know.
Well, I guess we'll find out later.
I guess S-rank was just for Black Trigger people.
Right. That's why, because they don't participate in the rank wars if they've got the stuff, yeah. Right? Anyway, so Kageyura is chilling somewhere in the common area, basically. So a couple of guys are whispering to each other, hey, danger, there's that guy with shaggy hair. Oh, the one who forfeited 8,000 points? Yeah, he got all the way to A-rank when he gets into fights. What an idiot. What's the point of even entering the rank wars, right? He can't even calculate the pros and cons of his own actions. Yeah, he doesn't look very smart. And Kageyura,
he has a small dick, too. Can't even imagine his checkbook. He looks like he's ugly, too, but he likes shitty movies. All of his cartoon characters are lame. Yeah, I bet everything he likes sucks.
But Kageyura turns around and is like, hey, do you have a problem with me? And he's got, like, a... First of all, he's got, like, razor-sharp teeth. And
he's
like
a shark!
And, like, a surgical mask, but it's, like, around his chin instead of around his mouth for some reason.
Wasn't that, like, the sickness mask in Japan? The mask
you
wear whenever
you're
sick.
Yeah, but in order for that to work, you have to wear it over your fucking mouth.
Well, then no one would be able to see his shark teeth, Nick. You can see the quandary he's in. I like this guy, though, Nick, if only because his hairstyle and his teeth make him distinct enough that I know who he is if you put him in a room.
Yeah, it's going to be so much easier to keep track of this guy.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, I remember fucking Shark Dude.
So Murakami and Yuma come into the area, and Murakami is like, oh, Kage's already here. So Kageyura kind of has addressed the two nameless goons, and they're like, we were just chatting. Yeah, we're actually fans of yours. Could have heard at this. That's, we should have been speaking through comms, though. So it's like, okay.
And they're speaking through comms now. Like, they're just like, yeah, let's turn on our comms.
Yeah, well, they're actually thinking to themselves when they're like.
Sorry, right afterwards they start
betting. They're like, okay, let's switch to comms. Oh, man, he's scary. That was close, but he's a lot tamer than I thought. So anticlimactic. He's probably scared he'll get punished again. Don't threaten us, stupid.
What a queef. What a quiche of queef he is. Jeez. What does that mean? I don't know, but it's pretty funny, right? Got two Q words at once. No one can do that kind of alliteration. Certainly not that idiot. Hey, where's my head going? Oh, no.
Kageyura is just like, I've changed my mind. Hold up. What do you want? Slice! And just like, from like 20 feet away, it just cuts their heads off. And they fall out of, combat mode. And they're like, funny! Coming outside practice is a violation of... What? Whatever. You guys just tripped by yourselves. Or did you see me do something? Tell me. What did I do, huh?
You're mean.
Like, Yeah, so Yuma's like, wow, he's really fast. How the fuck did he manage to use a scorpion from that far away? And Murakami said, just tells him, don't stare at him too hard or else he's gonna snap at you too. So, I imagine it's not like he has some super hearing or anything like that. Because we've already seen someone who has that quirk.
Unless he has the ability specifically to hear comms of some kind. Like he can intercept
signals.
Or to
hear people talking about him. Or to sense people paying attention to him. But yeah, that's the end of the chapter. So I really like the fact that we're getting all this build-up for all these different members of the various squads that Tamagoma is going to have to go up against. So, yeah, it's cool stuff. Unfortunately, World Trigger is going to be off next week, so it's going to be a little while before we get more, but oh well.
It is a bummer, but a good chapter. It's like we got with the Nasu squad and Kagura squad match, where we kind of built it up, like, hey, here are these other groups, here's a reason for you to, kind of see them and care about them prior to this, so really dug that. Although there's a fourth group in this, and I don't know if we've seen anyone from their squad yet.
We have not. We've seen Kageyura, and we've seen the guy looking for Hadahara, and that's it. So, two groups so far. So, but, it seems like we've kind of been going through them in order, because we saw the top-ranked team, and then the number two-ranked team, so maybe after seeing these guys, we'll get stuff for the last team. I don't know.
It's cool that we built up a rival, presumably for Chica as well.
Also, it seems like there's a little bit of, like, teasing going on between them. It's like, look, we found someone Chica's age to tease her with.
Yeah, someone who also looks like he's really underage. So it's cool, because both of them are, like, weird.
Look,
like
he that. Blushed when she complimented him.
I'm just like, look, as long as this doesn't take away from my Katoru Samu ship.
As long as neither of them wear bikinis, it's fine. Actually, if one of them wears a bikini, it's still fine, as long as it's not a provocative pose that she's put in.
Or if it's just him and he's in a provocative pose, because that's just funny then. That's inappropriate. He doesn't seem like the kind of character to wear a bikini, but he's in one and he's working it. So that's amusing.
Called irony.
Yes.
Situational irony.
He really is working it. This is a guy, he should stop being a sniper and become a fashion model immediately.
Anyway, that's the recap portion of the manga recap. Everything was good except Fairy Tail.
Yeah, I think this was a good week. Fairy Tail was just that one odd man out. Yeah, good one all around.
I mean, I don't think there was actually a single, like, exceptional chapter, except for Naruto, which has just had a really good run in this whole sequel set, and I'm kind of sad to see it go. Yeah, we're going to have more next week, along with, hopefully, by Omega, and yeah, that's going to do it. Thank you, everyone, for joining us here for Weekly Manga Recap. We record the show on twitch.tv/RoloT, normally Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, although my schedule has been fluctuating of late, and we're probably going to have to reschedule it next week, so follow us on Twitter for updates in that regard. He is at RoloT, and I am at YRuler of Time. Also, be sure to check out past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. Do you happen to know, Chris, if they actually keep the episodes beyond the 200?
I know. Yes, I looked up and you can. Now, I think iTunes for a little bit. I don't know if it's been fixed. Actually, let me go check that real quick here. For a while, it's and I don't know why. This is something with iTunes because it's been other podcasts have had this, but it only displays 20 episodes. But if you go onto Podbean.com, you can still get all the previous episodes back to even our pilot. So. It seems like that was just maybe something they changed or maybe something that didn't apply exactly. But either way, you can still get those.
And, of course, don't neglect iTunes anyway, though, because if you give us a rating or review, it helps the algorithm, basically. So please do that. Help us beat those woodworkers so that we'll become a Y-grade podcast.
Yes, and then we can get MeUndies to sponsor us, Nick. Can you imagine that day? Get to talk about it. I'm so excited for the day we get sponsored. I've got plans for it. It makes such a huge deal. I don't care who the first person is. They're like, Ashley Madison. I'm like, yo, you want to cheat on your wife? Here's the way to do it.
No, the Margarita does not endorse cheating, but...
If Ashley Madison pays us to, I will.
We don't have anyone to answer to. Fine. Cheat on your wife. You know you want to.
Yeah, or, you know, cheat
and
on
if
your
you're
husband.
And if you don't have a wife, you have a husband, cheat on your husband.
And you know what? If you're you know, the wife listening to this or the husband listening to this, and you suspect your partner's cheating on you
if
using
you
Ashley
us,
Madison,
if you pay us, we'll tell you.
Yeah, I have an inside in there. I can get their records. No, but I do want to actually give a thank yous to Raider 1991. He says I listen to the weekly show and Jump podcast, but want to hear different opinions. I found these guys. I love their duality, and they always keep me interested. And also from Cobalt 01, it says long running podcast with two great hosts. So thank you both of you. For giving us 5-star reviews on iTunes. It is greatly appreciated.
Thank you very much for that. And, of course, if you want to give us a suggestion for a future manga for us to read or have a more in-depth discussion of your thoughts on a particular episode of the podcast, you can email all that stuff to us. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com is the address to send all your suggestions to. Also, that is how we get that is our resource for answering questions. So if you have a question you want answered on the show, then send that to us. Special thanks go out to Steve Mann, our tile crush. You can check out his work at narokfanboy.deviantart.com, idrawboobs.tumblr.com, and patreon.com/Steve Mann. Special thanks as well go out to The Infamous Planet and Felix Dark 2 for making those awesome visual editions of our podcast. You can check out both of their YouTube accounts. Once again, that's The Infamous Planet and Felix Dark 2.
Now, did you get it right so Infamous Planet can stop bitching about, oh, Nick never gets more YouTube raw, I can't be bothered to correct him.
Do I forget the sometimes? Is that
it should just be, I think, youtube.com/infamousplan. I think Felix changed his YouTube as well. I'm not 100% certain on that. I just know he bitches about it, like, once a week in the chat room. I'm like, oh, can't be bothered to correct Nick, though.
I'm looking at it right now. It's youtube.com/user/TheInfamousPlanet.
But I think he just has the slash infamous plan now. He says, yeah, he's even in the chat right now, like, oh, I've been bothered, he got both wrong.
Well, you know what, why did you change it then?
He's all off of branding. Because, you know, cat's got to know one name. If I'm going to get me own MeUndies sponsor, if I'm going to convince people to cheat on their spouses, I'll be real good at it, you know?
And Felix Dark 2's recent episodes are just actually, I guess, under a different account, which is Felix Dark. So
there you go. So youtube.com/FelixDark and youtube.com/InfamousPlanet.
Why did you change the name, Infamous Planet? Come on. That's
not I think it was for branding. He's like, I'm Infamous Planet on this and that and everything else. Fucking bollocks.
It redirects to /user/TheInfamousPlanet anyway. Fuck off. That's our show, everybody. Good night.
Bye.